agencies are usually coming to our camps for questioning, asking our IDs, and this has become a routine. We are terrified and we can't even sleep, thinking what would happen to us.
Anti-Rohingya sentiments have risen since the emergence of Hindu nationalist government of BJP in 2014. Since then, many anti-Rohingya campaigns and Hindu groups have been demanding their expulsion, while the government describes them as security threat. Observers say the Rohingya refugees in particular have in the past and present been used largely for political reasons in this part of the world. Munawar Zaman, New Delhi.
Yemenis have come together before the UN office in Sana'a to call on the international community to step in under pressure the Saudi-led coalition into releasing detained oil vessels. The detention of oil vessels has left the country in desperate struggle to survive amid a harsh shortage of fuel.
We have lots of problems amid fuel shortage. We stay here for days to get some liters of gasoline due to the blockade imposed by the Saudi-led coalition and the continued detention of oil ships. We call on those who are after making concessions against the enemies to stand firm when it comes to the basic needs of Yemeni people.
Major sectors including health have warned that they may collapse in a few days if the detained oil vessels by the Saudi-led coalition are not immediately released. Thousands of facilities have already stopped providing services due to a lack of fuel.
The situation today is entirely catastrophic, especially in the health sector. The petroleum company is unable to provide health facilities with the oil derivatives. 50 days have passed and not even a lift has been allowed to enter the port of Hodeidah. The US and the UN bear responsibility of what is happening in Yemen.
The Saudi-led coalition is still holding 14 Yemeni oil ships illegally as they were inspected and authorized by the United Nations through verification and inspection mechanism. Hundreds of cars take days in long lines in front of the only working gas station in Sana'a. Yemenis say overcoming this dire situation needs a real action by the international community to step in and to pressure the Saudi-led coalition to release the detained oil vessels. Abdul Latif Al-Washali, Sana.
The prosecutor's office against hate crimes in Barcelona says it sees sufficient evidence to investigate Spain's far right for allegedly inciting hatred against Muslims following a complaint by several Muslim communities in Catalonia. At the core of the controversy is a video published online by the nativist ultra-nationalist party Vox during the recent election campaign in Catalonia.
The video falsely claims the entire Muslim community in Catalonia is responsible for the 2017 terrorist attacks in Barcelona. It purportedly shows footage of women in burqas in mosques that was actually shot in Afghanistan and other countries.
Vox's Twitter account was temporarily suspended at the end of January for breaching the company's hate speech regulations with false accusations and unfounded claims against Muslims in Catalonia.
Their strategy is to polarize society, to create fear and manipulate that fear in order to antagonize communities. This is an old mechanism that underlies all forms of racism. It alienates others by labeling them as foreigners. It goes back centuries in the Iberian Peninsula, and that is where you need to start in order to understand the rise of Islamophobia in Spain.
Vox won 11 seats in Catalonia's regional parliament. Their aggressive campaign against Muslims has raised awareness among community leaders to re-examine their alliances.
We regret the silence of political parties in Catalonia in this election. While they all wooed Muslim voters, not a single one had the courage to stand up and denounce the Islamophobic, xenophobic attacks against our country.
Although Catalonia is home to nearly 500,000 Muslims and has elected its first Muslim female member of parliament in 2017, it does not have a central cultural center or great mosque to this day.
Unlike in previous suits against the far right, representatives of the Muslim community in Catalonia say they believe they have a solid case against Vox. They trust the courts will do them justice this time around. Kusai Kedri, Barcelona.
executive arm, the European Commission, has just launched a new strategy designed to make the 27-nation bloc more assertive when it comes to trade policy. Apparently, the aggressive Trump era highlighted weaknesses in this area. During an online press conference, we asked the commissioner in charge if EU firms will be able to trade with Iran despite threats of penalties from the US for doing so.
Against the illegal application of third country, illegal extraterritorial application of third country sanctions. For this we have a blocking statute which we are looking how to update it.
On Thursday, Charles Michel, who has a mandate to speak on behalf of the EU's 27 government leaders, held a phone conversation with the president of Iran, Hassan Rouhani. A statement issued on behalf of the European Council president says he told Rouhani the EU will continue to deploy efforts to facilitate the full implementation of the Iran nuclear agreement and America's return to the deal. Joe Biden has expressed his willingness to rejoin the 2015 international agreement, officially called the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, or JCPOA. The point has been made by numerous commentators. This is not about Biden giving indications or keeping promises. It's about the United States respecting international law. After all, the JCPOA is underpinned by a United Nations resolution. So far, however, Biden's administration has failed to take definitive action. The European Investment Bank has told us it will work with Iran once the conditions are right.
It means that, for example, the sanction policy has to be then different, and all the international agreements, you know, that we have to also adhere to, all that has to be sorted out before we can go and be active.
If Washington's illegal sanctions are lifted, Iran will be able to interact more freely with the EU across all industries, including energy.
The more supply there is, the weaker the prices in principle. So Iran being on the market both for oil and gas is good news for the consumers.
The EU is not shy about releasing statements, but it's unclear what concrete steps the bloc, as coordinator of the JCPOA, is taking to pull the US back into line. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
This winter has seen food bank queues snaking around corners in the UK. Those down on their luck waiting up to 5 hours in the freezing cold, not knowing if there will be anything left for them. In places where poverty and hunger were already rife, it's the tip of the iceberg. Jaywick, a seaside village in southeast England, named the country's most deprived area for the past decade. Over the years, local authorities have been grilled over worsening conditions here to no avail. The council declined our request for an interview, but on Facebook, residents themselves were forthcoming. Maria responded to my post, saying her family and neighbours needed food. People here resent their Jaywick's shanty town status and are wary of outsiders. Reporters have tried to get interviews by offering them alcohol in the past. Drug and alcohol abuse are already a problem here. The government has given the local council millions of pounds to build a marketplace and affordable housing, but the locals say they're yet to feel the benefit of that.
They sort the landlords out and they do better housing for people in Jaywick. I know they've built some new houses, but the trouble is the residents of Jaywick are not being offered the new housing.
They're not.
So it is, they're not clearing the crisis really, because there's a lot of people struggling in places with no heating and poor decorating.
These cottages used to be temporary holiday accommodation, but have served as permanent homes for decades now. They are run down and have little or no heating. There is no pressure on property owners to fix them either. Brenda has lived here for 31 years, and with her husband suffering from Alzheimer's, the food bank closing has only added to her woes. Supermarkets say they can't deliver to Jaywick. People are relying on community spirit to get them through. Half the children here live in poverty. Unemployment is high. For every 5 people, there's only 1 job. The British government stands accused of leaving it to charities to feed the country's hungry, millions of them children. NGOs say this is a comedown for the 5th largest economy in the world, and food bank queues growing because of the pandemic has only highlighted an already existing crisis. Bianca Rahimi, London.
Fa
Following the bitterly disputed 2020 election campaign, top pollster Gallup has found that support for third parties is at its highest point ever in the United States. 62% of people agree that a third party is needed because Democrats and Republicans, quote, do such a poor job representing the American people. Another polling record was also recorded. The number of Americans who identify as an independent is now at 50%.
And everybody's tired of it. Everybody is fed up with the hypocrisy and ineffectiveness of the Democrats in the terms that they claim to want to be effective. I think they're actually very effective in what they're actually doing. And the Republicans, of course, you know, they have one program, which is tax cuts for the rich.
Ex-President Donald Trump, who remains banned from top U.S. social media, issued a rare statement which attacked top Republican leadership. That's being interpreted as a sign that he may stay within the mainstream and try to make so-called Trumpism the undisputed platform of the Republican Party. However, there is much speculation that Trump will start a new third party. Polls say a Trump-led third party would attract not just two-thirds of Republicans, but also 30% of independents and even 15% of Democrats. The party would push Republicans into third place, ushering in a new era of multi-party plurality and ending what is probably the world's oldest political duopoly.
Certainly those people are out there ready for the picking for a third party that they perceive as A, fighting for things that are important to their daily life, and B, treating them with respect and not treating them as, you know, you're racist and fascist and you know, sexist and whatever.
Trump won in 2016 by running as a so-called outsider candidate, and while he is unemployed 4 years later, rejection of the two mainstream parties is now the majority sentiment. The most popular third parties currently in the U.S. are the Libertarians, who are associated with a strong demand for individualism, the Greens, the Party for Socialism and Liberation, and the Alliance Party, a coalition for independence. Those parties combined for under 2% of the 2020 presidential vote. Ramin Mazahiri, Chicago.
A small shipment of the coronavirus vaccine has finally made it to the Gaza Strip after long delays by the Israeli regime. On Wednesday, the first batch of the Russian Sputnik V vaccines was received by the Ministry of Health in the Gaza Strip. The blockaded enclave has registered close to 54,000 coronavirus infections, mostly since late August 2020. The Israeli regime allowed the entry of the vaccines after coming under heavy criticism by human rights organizations.
Israel, as an occupying power of Palestinian land, bears full responsibility for providing all medical supplies, including inoculations, to combat the coronavirus. We call on all international organizations, including Amnesty International and the World Health Organization, to continue their pressure on Israel to abide by international laws and norms.
Under the Fourth Geneva Convention, the Israeli regime must ensure medical supplies to Palestinians, including combating the spread of pandemics. The enclave's health sector has been battered by the Israeli blockade and multiple wars.
Finally, and after a long delay, the Israeli occupation allowed the transfer of vaccines to the 2 million Palestinians in Gaza. And I think that came as a result of an intervention from UN agencies like WHO and human rights groups.
Despite the increasing number of coronavirus infections in the Gaza Strip, the Israeli regime continues to place tight restrictions on the entry of humanitarian supplies, including medical equipment.
We have been campaigning on all levels, especially on international agencies, to pressure Israel, who is an occupying power, to bear its legal responsibilities. We have made partial success with the entry of a small shipment of vaccines. We will continue to campaign and expose Israel's actions that have led to the deterioration of the health sector in Gaza, especially during the coronavirus pandemic.
Experts maintain that the Israeli blockade must be fully lifted to help avert a humanitarian disaster.
Human rights groups say Israel's illegal practices have compounded the risk of coronavirus infection for nearly 2 million Palestinians, making it extremely difficult to combat the pandemic. Ashraf Shana, Gaza.
The latest available data suggests only 4.8% of EU citizens have so far been vaccinated against COVID-19. Frustration levels are growing because it is not yet clear when people living in the 27-nation bloc can expect to receive the jab.
Of course, everybody needs to speed up. All the countries, France, Belgium, Germany, it's all hanging. We're all hanging around and just waiting.
For example, in France, for my grandparents, it's quite hard to get some appointments to have a dose.
We should speed up a little more and start vaccination a lot. Vaccinate people a lot.
In hindsight, it turned out a bad decision that the EU was responsible because the overall administration is so complex, it would have been easier to have this set up on a national level.
That widely held opinion is being rejected by the head of the European Commission.
With the purchasing power of 27, we were able to agree on this enormous volume I've just described, 2.3 billion doses.
So where are these doses? Experts say the reason the UK and US are way ahead of the EU on vaccination is because the European Commission was too slow to sign contracts with producers, and approval to use the jabs is also a sluggish process.
Mass vaccination centres like this one in Brussels are popping up right across the European Union. On the face of it, that sounds like a great thing. The problem is they are practically empty due to vaccine supply issues.
The European Commission has just launched a plan designed to detect variants of the disease earlier and share this information across the EU. The problem is that mutations are allowed to form when large numbers of people are not vaccinated.
We are ready to go one step further and to propose an emergency authorization of vaccines at EU level with shared liability among us if there's a decision by the European leaders to move in this direction.
The economic consequences for the EU of this slow vaccines rollout are almost immeasurable. The political consequences for the project might prove fatal, according to some analysts. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Hi, good morning.
Hello, good morning.
Good morning.
Morning, sir.
Half a kilo of Halim, please.
Hi, sir.
Hi, Kitty. Good morning.
Number one, hands up. Number two, hands on the waist.
Hi, good morning.
Hi, good morning.
Get ready for jogging to warm up.
Hello, good morning.
Hello, good morning.
One loaf of well-baked bread, please.
Thank you.
the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, who allowed none to witness when He created the heavens and the earth, and who took no helper when He authored the spirits. He has no associate in divinity and no support in unity. Tongues fall silent before the limits of describing Him. Intellects fail before the core of knowing Him. Terrors fall low in awe of Him. Faces are humbled in fear of Him, and everything mighty yields to His mightiness. So to Thee belongs praise again and again, well measured, continually, and methodically. And may His blessings be upon His messenger endlessly, and His salutation everlastingly, eternally. O Allah, make the beginning of this day of mine righteousness, its middle prosperity, and its end success. I seek refuge in Thee from a day whose beginning is fright, and whose middle is anxiety, and whose end is pain. O Allah, I pray forgiveness from Thee for every vow I have vowed, and every promise I have promised, and every pledge I have pledged, then failed to keep for Thee. I ask Thee concerning the complaints of Thy servants against me. If there is a servant from among Thy servants, of a handmaid from among Thy handmaids, who has against me a complaint, because I have wronged him in respect to himself, his reputation, his property, his wife or his child, or because evil words I have spoken about him in his absence, an imposition upon him through inclination, caprice, scorn, zeal, false show, bigotry, whether he be absent or present, alive or dead, such that my hand has fallen short and my capacity has been too narrow to make restitution to him or to annul my obligation to him, I ask Thee, O He who owns all objects of need which are granted by His will and hastened to His desire, that Thou blessest Muhammad and the household of Muhammad, peace be upon them, and makest the one I have wronged satisfied with me in the manner that Thou willst, and givest me mercy from Thee. Forgiveness decreases Thee not, and giving injuries Thee not. O most merciful of the merciful, O Allah, give me on every Monday two favors from Thee: the facility to obey Thee at its beginning, and the favor of Thy forgiveness at its end. O He who is Allah, and none other than whom grants forgiveness for sin.
The debate.
Satellite images show that Israel is carrying out a significant expansion of its Dimona nuclear facility in Negev Desert. Now, this is the same location where it makes the fissile material for its nuclear arsenal. In this edition of the debate, we will be discussing Israel's policy of deliberate ambiguity about its nuclear arsenal and the support that it receives from the silence of world powers.
Satellite images of Israel's top-secret nuclear site, Dimona, shows it is undergoing a major expansion. An independent group of arms control and non-proliferation experts, known as the International Panel on Fissile Material, published the images in which significant construction work is visible. The panel says a section of the complex under construction is several hundred meters from the reactor and reprocessing plant. The purpose of the construction is not known. The construction appeared to have started in early 2019 or late 2018. Israel's Dimona nuclear facility is located near the southern city of Dimona in the Negev Desert. The site, which is widely believed to be key to Israel's nuclear arms manufacturing program, was built with covert assistance from the French government in the 1960s. Though Israel has acknowledged the existence of the Dimona nuclear reactor, it has never confirmed nor denied the purpose of the facility. Reports strongly indicate that Dimona manufactures nuclear weapons. To this day, Israel has never acknowledged possessing a nuclear arsenal. Instead, it has maintained a policy of nuclear ambiguity. The Federation of American Scientists estimate that Tel Aviv has around 90 warheads made from plutonium produced in the Dimona heavy water reactor. In 2008, former President Jimmy Carter said Israel holds at least 150 nuclear weapons, the first time a U.S. president publicly acknowledged Israel's atomic arsenal.
The United States has more than 12,000 nuclear weapons, and the Soviet Union has about the same. And as you know, Great Britain and France have several hundred, and Israel has 150 or more.
Other sources, however, put the number at over 400. Tel Aviv has always turned a deaf ear to international calls for nuclear transparency. With the support of the United States and other Western countries, the occupying regime has even refused to join the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. While Tel Aviv constantly calls for pressure in countries like Iran over their nuclear activities, none of Israel's nuclear facilities are subjected to IAEA inspections. Experts believe Israel's nuclear activity is the main cause of instability in the region and a proof of West's double standards vis-a-vis nukes.
Now, to continue this discussion, we're joined by peace activist and political commentator Brian Terrell and also anti-Zionist activist and commentator Mick Napier. Now, let's begin with our first guest, Mr. Brian Terrell. Mr. Terrell, Israel built the Dimona reactor in the 1950s with extensive and clandestine help from the French, while world powers have turned a blind eye on its nuclear activities ever since. Why are world powers not so concerned about this major security threat?
Well, I think the term deliberate ambiguity, or it's been called the worst kept secret in the world, really a secret. It's a lie because it is so transparent. I think it's the blind eye is turned because Israel has been functioning as a client state of the West and in the region. And it's not just a lie, it may be the one of the most dangerous and irresponsible and destructive deceptions ever. It does put the whole area in risk. And as there's the arms race, just as after World War II, it was the United States having nuclear weapons, the first country, the only country to ever use them, that is what drove the Soviet Union to get nuclear weapons in kind. And I don't believe there is a similar race going on in the Middle East, but if there ever will be, it will be because it's driven by Israel's nuclear weapons production and not by the other nations.
Thank you very much. Let's bring in Mr. Mick Napier. Now, Mr. Napier, what do you believe to be true here? Now, in May 2008, as we saw in the package, former U.S. President Jimmy Carter confirmed that Israel had at least 150 atomic weapons in its arsenal. Why has the West failed to do something about the 60-plus-year-old nuclear elephant in the room?
I think there's two reasons. One, If we look at 1973, the war between Egypt and Israel, Israel came quite close to losing it. And we know that the communications between Israel and the USA included a threat by Israel. And it's not the first threat. They had discussed earlier detonating a nuclear weapon. They didn't do it, but they had discussed detonating a nuclear weapon in the Sinai to warn the Egyptians. But there was communications between Israel and the USA, and the USA was to a degree blackmailed because Israel threatened that it might use nuclear weapons on Cairo if it were to be losing the war, and at one stage it was. It never happened, but I think there is this aspect that shouldn't be lost sight of, that Israel does actually threaten its allies with the possibility of using a nuclear weapon if it loses a war, in order to make sure that America, Germany, and other states provide it with massive quantities of weapons to give it an edge over any coalition of Arab powers. So Israel's a dangerous possessor of nuclear weapons. By the way, there's no question that they have nuclear weapons. I was involved here in Scotland in an election campaign for an Israeli nuclear technician called Mordechai Vanunu, who was later kidnapped from Rome because he revealed to British newspapers from his experience inside the Dimona nuclear plant, he revealed that Israel was a very, very substantial possessor of nuclear weapons. So that's not in doubt. But I think Israel has shown time and time again how dangerous it is as a possessor of nuclear weapons, not only by actual threats to use the weapons, threats made to the USA and threats which made their way to the government in Cairo as well, but also because it's Israel in 1975 had Shimon Peres, who later won a Nobel Peace Prize, met with delegates from the South African military, the apartheid regime, and offered to sell nuclear weapons to the apartheid regime in South Africa. This is not a conspiracy theory. This is public domain. We have the photographs, we have the testimonies, and so on. So Israel is a possessor of nuclear weapons. That possession, that monopoly in the Middle East is protected by the USA and by the West at the same time as they're also being intimidated by Israel. It's a very, very dangerous situation, and everybody knows the reality despite this nonsense of deniability from Tel Aviv.
Exactly, and as you mentioned, also, in order to confirm what you just said, former CIA Director Robert Gates said during his 2006 Senate confirmation hearing for the Secretary of Defense that Iran is surrounded by, quote, powers with nuclear weapons, including the Israelis, to the West. It seems that the U.S. and Europe are deliberately turning a deaf ear to the threat coming from Israeli nuclear weapons. Mr. Terrell, what do you think is the reason for this hypocrisy?
Well, the hypocrisy, historically, it's used our Israel bombed nuclear reactors in Iraq in 1981, Syria 2007. They said that there was weapons, it was connected to some kind of weapons production. At the same time, the United States this year has announced making 80 new plutonium pits for the first time, the core of a nuclear weapon, producing more. And we are, the United States in 2015 pledged $1 trillion over 10 years for the life extension of the nuclear weapons that we possess now and development of new nuclear weapons. So there is an arms race going on. There are more nuclear weapons being built, as we see in Des Moines.
Well, we seem to have a bad connection there, Mr. Terrell. Let's bring in Mr. McNapier. Now, Mr. Napier, as Mr. Terrell also mentioned, the countries that actually assisted Israel in making these nukes include the U.S., France, Germany, Britain, Norway. And all of these have nuclear weapons themselves, and they've never insisted for Israel to join the NPT. Why?
Well, if I may correct you, they don't all have nuclear weapons. Norway doesn't, but Britain and France most certainly do. Germany doesn't. But, why have they taken this attitude towards Israeli nuclear weapons? I'd have to say there is a slight contradiction. There have been feeble complaints or distancing by the European countries compared to the USA. A few years ago, Netanyahu thanked the Obama Secretary of State John Kerry for preventing the convening of a United Nations conference on a nuclear-free Middle East. Every country in the Middle East wanted the conference to take place. The UN wanted the conference to take place. Including Britain and France. The only countries which opposed it were Israel and the USA. And as I say, Netanyahu thanked Kerry for preventing that awful outcome of a nuclear-free lease. So there's no question that there is an appetite across the Middle East, certainly by the people, but even by many of the states, to have a nuclear-free Middle East. Israel and the USA have prevented that wish from being fulfilled. And you have to ask the question, why? I mean, in terms of, to answer the question why, what is Israel? Israel isn't the response of Western guilt about the Holocaust, not at all. It's a strategic alliance. I forget the Israeli Prime Minister's name, and it might come back to me, but he said famously, Israel is, and he was such a racist, Israel is a villa in the jungle, he said, meaning it's an extension of Western power into the region. And this is a tradition starting from Herzl, the founder of Zionism, even before the State of Israel is founded. They see themselves as an extension of Western civilization against the savages, the Arabs and the Iranians and others in the Middle East. Forgive my language, but this is what the villa in the jungle metaphor actually means. And therefore, the West wants Israel to be able to have a military power to repeat 1967 if it's necessary. In 1967, Israel smashed the armies of Egypt, Syria, and Jordan, and made Western control of the resources of the region, the oil, safe for a generation. It headed off that threat from local people to have local control of their resources. And the nuclear question has to be seen in that context. Israel uses nuclear weapons not primarily to threaten to use them, but to tell other countries that they always have this in reserve. You don't mess with us. We are capable of overwhelming violence if anyone challenges Israeli. But essentially, Israel is a projection of Western domination of the Middle East. And this is not a conspiracy theory. We can see this from before Sykes-Picot. We can see this from before Balfour, why the Zionist project was endorsed in the first place. And there's an absolute continuity. It's not, sometimes there are disagreements. President Eisenhower, the Americans, kicked Israel out of Egypt in 1956 because they colluded with France and Britain. At that time, the dominant powers in the Middle East, although declining. But today, Israel has changed its sponsorship from these two fading powers to the USA and acts as an extension of their military power.
But Mr. Napier, I'm sorry to cut you off right there. But since you mentioned the Arab world, actually, let's not forget that the Arab world itself is now growing impatient with the situation, and Egypt in particular has threatened to walk out of the NPT unless there's some kind of progress in creating a Middle East, nuclear-free Middle East. So how long do you think the silence can last? And if you could please make it quick, because we also want to have Mr. Otero's views, and we're running out of time.
Of course. One cannot predict. When do these when will this consensus end? And you're right, the Egyptian government has some sense that they shouldn't be completely subordinate to Israel. After all, they enforce the siege of Gaza together with Israel. They may see themselves as partners, but not as inferiors. So they balk, they chafe at the reality of Israel having a nuclear monopoly with which to dominate the region. So even that alliance is under serious tension. How long will it last? Who knows? But it's certainly a lie which has been promoted in Western capitals that Israel needs nuclear weapons and doesn't have them and may have them. It's the line at the moment, but it could change if there were serious, if the states in the Middle East moved together against Israel's nuclear monopoly.
Thank you, Michelle. Let's bring back to Mr. Terrell. Now, Iran's foreign minister has tagged the U.S. president, the IAEA, the British, French, and German heads of state in a tweet reminding them that Dimona is the region's only nuclear bomb factory. Would you expect any kind of reaction?
I would hope for one. I don't expect one. No, because of this deliberate ambiguity, as it's called, which brings the entire, there's no reason for Egypt to remain in the non-proliferation treaty. There's no reason for anyone, as long as a blind eye is turned to one country. You know, this makes the entire nuclear proliferation treaty, the entire effort to disarm the world of nuclear weapons renders it incoherent. This is absolutely necessary for the fate of the world that Israel is being held responsible for the nuclear weapons that of course it has and that it's using every day by the implied threat. Just as was said, that these weapons could be used at any time is entirely destabilizing and destructive.
So do you see any practical solution to make Israel accountable?
I think right now in the United States it's very important for U.S. citizens to tell our government that it needs to at least go back to the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action that Donald Trump destroyed. That policy, the Trump's policy, was just totally politically it's nonsense, and we've got nothing to lose by stepping back and going back to the status quo of the Obama years, which was bad enough, dangerous enough, but we need to lift the sanctions against Iran. We need to demand that Israel come clean on its nuclear weapons, and even then, that's just a start. That's only going to be a start to make the world safer.
Now, Mr. Napier, do you believe that there's a practical solution to make Israel accountable?
It's possible. I think it would depend, it would rely on a joint agreement, however minimal, by powers in the region to force the issue of Israel's nuclear weapons, to force it onto the public agenda. It's possible because America is pulling down its interest in the Middle East. It's beginning to focus on the possibility of a conflict with China, some sort of conflict, hopefully short of all-out war. But it's beginning to shift attention away from the Middle East. The danger there, it relies more on the Israeli surrogate, on Israel as an extension of Western power into the region, just as it did after the Vietnam War when America was being defeated and they decided that to avoid U.S. troops in the region, they would treat Israel as America's unsinkable aircraft carrier. So it's a dangerous period. But it's possible, but it would mean active diplomacy by all the powers in the region, Egypt, Iran, etc., and then we'd have to see. But it's a very dangerous situation, that's without any doubt.
And finally, Mr. Napier and Mr. Terrell, both of you, if you could please wrap this up as quickly as you can. With a long history of aggression that Israel has, is it logical to allow Israel to expand its nukes? Mr. Napier.
Of course not. Israel is the only country, I think, in the world which has attacked all of its neighbors at least once and often much more than once. So it shouldn't be in possession of its so-called conventional weapons because they are used to colonize Palestine, and there's no reason why the borders of Palestine will be the limit of Israeli ambitions. So everyone across the Middle East has an incentive to make sure that Israel does not become any stronger and is weakened because they are a threat to the people of the region.
Thank you very much, Mr. Terrell.
Well, I agree, and I think that the flow of conventional weapons from the United States and from the other Western powers needs to be addressed too. We need to have a disarmed Middle East, extreme as that sounds at this point. And the United States and Israel are the main culprits in the militarization of the region and have the biggest responsibility to do something about it.
Thank you very much, peace activist and political commentator Ryan Terrell, and also anti-Zionism activist and commentator Mick Napier. Thanks to both of you for joining us on this edition of The Debate, and thanks for following this edition.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/EN.
The Limelight.
The latest annual student data report from the Social Science Research Group, Jain Family Institute, published recently, belies claims by President Joe Biden, who said he would not cancel $50,000 in federal student loan debt per borrower, that such a move would disproportionately benefit people who attend elite private universities. Dear listeners, this was part of an article written by Brett Wilkins Ryder. This article is published under the heading, New Economic Study Demolishes Myth About Student Debt Parroted by Joe Biden. Stay tuned for the details, please. The latest annual student debt report from the social science research group Jain Family Institute, published recently, belies claims by President Joe Biden, who said he would not cancel $50,000 in federal student loan debt per borrower, that such a move would disproportionately benefit people who attend elite private universities. The 2021 Student Debt and Young America report, authored by JFI's Laura Beamer and Edward Nielaj, begins by noting that young people are overrun with student debt. This crisis is the culmination of waning government funding for higher education, wage stagnation, wealth inequality, and a misleading emphasis on obtaining high credentials, all leading to the financial gap between college prices and later earnings, they wrote. In 2020, aggregate balances reached $1.66 trillion in 2019 dollars, 122% higher in real dollars than in 2010, the authors continue. Not surprisingly, the number of borrowers, the amount they owe, and the number of loans each borrower acquires have all increased over the time period. In 2019, 18 to 35 year olds with a student loan debt owed nearly $35,000 on average, compared to just over $28,000 in 2009. Back in 2009, there were only 32 million federal borrowers. In 2019, that number swelled to 43 million. A recent study notes marked racial disparities in student debt, with black people suffering both the largest increase over time and the highest median amount owed in 2019, at $20,236. Asian students experienced the worst debt inequality in 2019, although their median debt was $18,548 that year. Their average debt balance was $38,860. Critically, this study finds, because low and lower middle-income communities see the worst debt-to-income ratios, they would see the largest portion of their income freed up throughout student debt forgiveness. Young adult borrowers in low and lower middle-income communities would receive an outsized share of forgiveness in aggregate dollars compared to middle and upper-income communities. This flies in the face of the implications of Biden's remarks at a CNN town hall in Milwaukee, where the president said he doesn't want to forgive billions of dollars of debt for people who have gone to Harvard and Yale and Penn, instead of using that money to provide money for early education for young children who come from disadvantaged circumstances. Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, an outspoken proponent of student debt forgiveness, rebutted Biden's assertion by asking, who cares what school someone went to? Entire generations of working-class kids were encouraged to go into more debt under the guise of elitism. This is wrong, Ocasio-Cortez tweeted late recently. The case against student loan forgiveness is looking shakier by the day. We can and should do it. Keep pushing. Speaking of freshly published JFI study, Beamer recently tweeted that she was waiting until this report came out to address the ridiculous Harvard, Yale, and Penn comment from Biden, calling it a myth that borrowers attending elite schools would overwhelmingly benefit from forgiveness compared to their peers elsewhere. Other progressive politicians and advocates also pushed back on Biden's remarks. Representative Ayanna Pressley affirmed that the president could cancel student debt with the stroke of a pen. Americans for Financial Reform, which has led demands for Biden to cancel $50,000 of student debt per borrower through executive action, recently decried Biden's proposed $10,000 per person debt relief as inadequate. Far more than $10,000 in cancellation is required, the group said, to provide it that 44 million families and economy need.